I'm going to be talking about how timing impacts how prenatal psychosocial context affects birth outcomes. And I have nothing to disclose. In my practice as a nurse midwife for the past 23 years, I've been increasingly concerned about these two adverse birth outcomes. And when I talk about adverse birth outcomes today, I'm talking about preterm birth and low birth weight, which, as this audience is well aware, we are not making good headway at decreasing the incidence of these problems. And it's a very expensive problem for our nation and our world, both economically and in terms of the quality of life costs for the families and the individuals involved. In my studies, I've seen that there are basically four dysfunctional paths that lead to the outcome of preterm birth. And many of you may be familiar with these, some may not. Obviously, infection, bleeding, and over-distended uteruses, such as in multiple gestations or when there's too much fluid, these are things that can cause preterm birth. But then there's the one that I'm the most interested in, which is the stress activation of the inflammatory cascade and the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, which is related to environmental stressors. And this accounts for about a third of all of the preterm births that we see. I want to talk for a moment about this role of inflammation in normal pregnancy, because most of you are probably not clinicians who would be aware of this pathophysiology. Inflammation is necessary in the first trimester of pregnancy to ensure appropriate implantation and development of the placenta. And it's also absolutely necessary in the last trimester of pregnancy to initiate labor and delivery. And so it is a feature or means to promote our survival. The inflammatory mechanisms are there to help us. But when these inflammatory mechanisms are triggered at the wrong times, we can get bad outcomes. I'm interested in the field of psychoneuroimmunology, looking at how our events and perceptions of events around us in our environment get translated into health outcomes through neurologic mechanisms, endocrine, and immune mechanisms that are all communicating together. We understand that there are psychosocial variables that have been well linked in the literature with adverse birth outcomes. Stress, depression, lack of social support. You're all familiar with the relationships between tobacco use and intimate partner violence and adverse birth outcome. But interestingly, the literature is actually fairly inconsistent on this. For every four articles I can find that show this relationship, there's at least one out there that says, well, no, not so much. And as I looked at the methodologic differences in these studies, I tried to figure out what was missing. And one of the things that I didn't see people discussing was the timing of these different variables. So here's a little placental physiology for you. The placenta is an endocrine and immune organ. For many decades, we had thought that the placenta was a barrier that protected the fetus from the environment, from the maternal environment, and thus the environment of the mother. But we now understand that actually, because of these psychoneuroimmune interactions that are occurring and processing what's going on in the environment, the placenta is actually communicating about all of those things, and the woman's body is communicating with the placenta about what's going on. And there are four basic interfaces that we've discovered that come online at different stages of gestation, and these interfaces, these cellular interfaces, actually dominate at different times during the pregnancy. And so it stands to reason, perhaps, that we would have different outcomes based upon which cellular interface was predominating. And that's the basis for this study. I was setting out to evaluate whether the timing of exposures to stressors and supports during pregnancy contributed to differences in outcome. And I was looking at stress, depression, tobacco use, partner support, and support from others. The parent study for this evaluation was the Baby Beep randomized control trial, which was a smoking cessation intervention trial with 695 tobacco users who were pregnant. And these were all women who had been recruited from WIC clinics. They were predominantly Caucasian because this was a Midwestern sample, and a third of these women tested positive for intimate partner violence within a year prior to or during their pregnancy. We collected data for these women at three time points, twice during pregnancy and again postpartum. So what I set out to do was restructure this data. I took the women who had been enrolled at baseline at different gestational ages as they came into the study, and then we went back a second time, some point in the second half of their pregnancy, and I restructured their data into seven gestational time periods that roughly reflect our current understanding of the cell signaling and placental interface changes that take place in the gestational period. So then I took this and put it into a multi-level structural equation model with, and I'm sorry, this it's not so important that you see what these each are. These are demographic variables here. And then over here we have our variables, the stress construct and depression construct, which both we did confirmatory factor analysis on before creating the model, and our social support and cotinine for that 4 to 9 week gestational group. And then we looked at the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh groups and regressed all of these onto birth weight, and then we did the same thing with gestational length. What we were testing was whether it made a difference that these paths were allowed to vary according to the gestational age group or not. And what we found was that the impact of these variables did indeed vary across gestational time periods when we had the full model with each path having its own weight versus the restricted model where all the tobacco levels were essentially held constant at the mean for the total sample. And we found that these were significantly different, and it was a significantly improved model when we did let all of these have their own weight. So it supported our hypothesis. And our main finding, our strongest effect in this model, was it had to do with stress at 24 to 28 weeks of pregnancy. What we found was that stress, which was a perceived stress and a life stressor construct put together, at 24 to 28 weeks led in this group of women to lower birth weight and shorter lengths of gestation. And this is very consistent with what the physiological literature would show us about that inflammation at the end of pregnancy. It's essentially jump-starting that placental inflammatory cascade that leads to labor and birth. And so this was indeed a very interesting finding for us. The second hypothesis was that whether perinatal intimate partner violence actually changed the timing in this model. And what we found was that it did, and that early stress and depression are associated with decreased birth weight and length of gestation in the women who are experiencing intimate partner violence, but not in the women who are not experiencing intimate partner violence. So what we find is that as early as 14 to 18 weeks gestation, these women who are experiencing increased stress and experiencing depression show relationships between decreased birth weight and decreased length of gestation. And as I just said, we don't see that until 24 to 28 weeks in the whole sample. So basically, the main finding of this study that I wanted to share with you today is that the stress after 28 weeks gestation is not predictive of gestational length in these women. And this is important because most of the stress and resiliency interventions that I, as a clinician, have been trained to implement in the last two decades occurs in the third trimester of pregnancy. It's not something that we start talking about when they first enter prenatal care. Our thought was that we needed to be providing some coping strategies for the postpartum period. And I would suggest to you today that perhaps we need to be working on these kinds of interventions earlier in pregnancy and, of course, preconceptionally as well. There is an evidence base for group care models, nurse home visiting and telephone support that all have shown that they've helped in decreasing adverse birth outcomes. And of course, there are specific interventions such as mindfulness techniques and communication strategies that can also address these psychosocial variables and improve birth outcomes. These are things that I would suggest we should be doing earlier. So in conclusion, the timing of exposure or a perception of stress and the level of social support during pregnancy matters. We need to do a lot more research, and I would encourage you, as you're designing your own research, to be mindful of these different differences in gestational processing between the placenta and the woman's environment, because there are some critical differences, apparently, in how we get different outcomes according to the time of gestation. So the psychosocial intervention timing does need to be reevaluated. I'd like to acknowledge my funders, the March of Dimes and the Alumni Association of the University of Virginia School of Nursing, and I'd like to thank the original research team, Dr. Linda Bullock, and her team at the University of Missouri School of Nursing, the Baby Beep team, and the participants who provided us with access to their lives during their pregnancy. Thank you so much for your attention, and I'm happy to take questions. Yes. There are many references. Most of this work comes from the group in the United Kingdom who do work on preeclampsia. It's the Redman and Sachs group. But it's self-signaling of the placenta and placental interfaces. Well, I think these are things ideally we would be capturing people in the last half of the first trimester and immediately, right now, for instance, with the group care models, group care doesn't usually start until about 14 weeks. I would suggest that we need to figure out ways to start those group care models in the first trimester, and because they're comprised of social support, health assessment, education. Those are things that all could help. Yes. So the research on, not in this study, we didn't look at any inflammatory markers. The only biomarker in this study was cotinine for tobacco use. But what we know about stress in pregnancy, there are many cytokines that have been implicated, and of course cortisol, increased cortisol levels. Those are all implicated in the inflammatory cascade activity that you see in the third trimester. I am hypothesizing that because we know there are relationships between HPA activation and these psychosocial variables, that that's what occurred in this sample. Yes. I have not looked at any yet. That would be an area that we need to be doing research in, I think. Yes. Stress was measured with the life stressor index on the prenatal psychosocial profile by Curry and by Cohen's perceived stress scale. Yes. I suspect that the life stressor scale would lend some support to pre-existing stress, although it was really measured at that point in time. The perceived stress, of course, is a this time point only kind of a measure. So I don't really have any data on what their stress levels were prior. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I love her work.
Yes.
She has a lot of information about the inflammatory process, and it's something that we definitely need to look at, and I'm so glad that you brought that up.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, she has also done some work in perinatal intimate partner violence, and so, yes, I'm very familiar with her work. Yes.
So I'm the founder of an organization called Mother Woman, and our focus of all of our work is on creating
Of course, one of the things that we didn't get into very well in our, we didn't address at all, actually, in looking at the other support, the support that was not from partners, it's very complex and confusing about how we operationalize social support from other people, which kind of social support, how much impact can we as public health professionals have by the support we directly provide versus the support structures we create in the community that are going to provide a more systemic kind of support. But thank you. Yes.
Thank you for your presentation. My question is around your assessment of stress, and you've done individual assessment of stress. Have you considered looking at community level stress? When you look at the populations that are most early delivery, preterminal birth rate, it often comes in communities that have excess levels of stress. Do you think there's a linkage?
Absolutely.
This
data set didn't have those community level variables in it, but in future work, I absolutely do want to include community level variables. Thank you. Yes. Right.
So my question is, did you have all, a distribution of first-time
mothers? We did, though the vast majority were first-time mothers in this study. I think about 70% of them were.
Did you sample the difference?
I did not look at that data yet. Yes, in the back. I don't have a good solution for that other than meeting at conferences like this and trying to learn how to work together. Well, thank you so much.
Good round of applause.